Hi there. Welcome to Piece of Work, the podcast. I'm Danielle Tantone. I'm a nurse, author, coach, and survivor. I love inspiring people to live their best life, reach for those big dreams, and find joy even in the pain. As I wrote my memoir over so many years, trying to make sense of a story where I was way too often the bad guy instead of the hero, I came to understand that we are all a piece of work, but we're also a work in progress. And even in our messiness, we are a work of art too, all at the very same time. In fact, we are all beautifully unique pieces of one masterpiece, waves in the same ocean. This podcast will explore the stories and struggles that make us human, the miracles that surround us, and all the ways we work to make sense of it all. Welcome to Piece of Work, the podcast. Today's episode is going to be a special excerpt from my book, Piece of Work, a Memoir. We are all a piece of work, a work in progress, and a work of art. I'm going to read you from the back cover, a little intro to the memoir. Piece of Work is the story of a spicy Jewish girl who tried to become a sweet Christian wife and failed miserably. Caught between expectations from two opposing worldviews, Danielle sought love like an addict chasing a drug. After years of tumbling through life searching for that missing piece, she finally found true love, forgiveness, and empathy within herself. With renewed faith, she faced breast cancer and became a nurse in the middle of a pandemic. She came to understand that her tumultuous life and complicated identity had left her with invaluable gifts, the ability to see both sides, the understanding of what it feels like to be broken, and the compassion to build up others. She discovered that we are all a piece of work, a work in progress, and a work of art. All at the same time. Enjoy the excerpt. And if you'd like to listen to the whole audiobook, it's available on Amazon and Audible. Piece of Work, a Memoir.
Chapter 1, Looking for Love. Saturday, November 8th, 2003. I take a bite of the best peanut butter and jelly sandwich I've ever tasted. Soft bread bursting with sticky grape jelly and smooth, salty peanut butter. It's possible anything would taste good right now, but I close my eyes to savor this delicious bite. After almost 8 hours on the tiny hard seat of my road bike, I'm sitting alone at a picnic table outside the cafeteria of the only high school in Gila Bend, Arizona. I can almost feel my blood sugar perking up, my muscles refueling on carbs, fat, and protein. Always watching my weight, I mentally calculate the calories in versus calories out. I've burned maybe 2,000 calories, and I've only eaten a few energy bars, some banana halves, a turkey sandwich at lunch, and a packet of chocolate goo. Surely I must have lost a few pounds in all these hours. I've always been short and curvy, never quite as skinny as I wanted to be. It's Saturday. No kids on campus today, just a bunch of crazy adults participating in the 2003 MS-150, a two-day, 150-mile cycling event that benefits multiple sclerosis. A glob of jelly plops down on my thigh, and I look down in an exhausted haze at my aching, tingling legs. They don't look any leaner. Maybe a little tanner, though. Or perhaps that's just a layer of sweat and grime. Regardless, I scoop the jelly up with my finger and lick it unabashedly. God made dirt, and dirt don't hurt. My right calf has some chain grease on it. A rookie mark, my cycling buddies in college would call it. I should be out of the rookie phase by now, but I think the guys I worked with at Outdoor Adventures would be glad to see how far I've come on that little purple Cannondale road bike they helped me pick out 10 years ago. It's like it was waiting there for me at the bike shop, on sale, mounted up on a pedestal, extra small just for me. I rode it around the parking lot, and I've been working hard to become a real cyclist ever since. I'm 29 now, still not fast on the bike, and hardly the ideal image of a cyclist. But I'll give myself credit for being one persistent little energizer bunny. My head is pounding, and I don't think I could get up if I tried. The hard wooden picnic bench cradling my tired butt. But somehow, I feel strangely great, powerful, like I could accomplish anything. It's been a warm day, but now a cool breeze blows through my hair and whisks the sweat from my skin. It's hard to believe it's November when it feels like a typical summer day in New York or Chicago. November can go either way in Arizona. There may be a week of chilly temps, rain, and wind, then another where it starts to feel like someone's summer again. I look around the schoolyard, sunburned grass, a few good-sized trees, pretty dismal. I take a long, hard swig of cool water, and then another bite of my sandwich. Gila Bend has, until today, been nothing more than a stopping point on the way to California or Mexico. When I was a kid, we'd stop and eat at the Space Age Diner, an iconic place right on the main road through town, outside a dingy motel that tries to look like some sort of futuristic space station. I'm glad this road trip won't take off again until tomorrow morning, especially since getting back on the road means another 8 hours on a hard bike seat pedaling. "Hey, do you know where Liz is?" I hear a male voice say. I look up. Three young guys in Bank of America jerseys that match my own stare down at me and my sandwich. The tall guy on the right gives me a shy grin. I must be quite a sight, my hair a frizzy mess, dried sweat on my face, jersey unzipped, lavender sports bra, and probably an ample amount of cleavage exposed. I peek down and discreetly zip up my jersey a tad. Well, at least they can tell I'm a girl. The shapeless jersey doesn't do much to show off my curves, and these Lycra cycling shorts show too many curves, making my short legs look even chunkier than they are. "I'm Steve," says the guy on the left. "This is Luke and James," he gestures toward his friends. "Hi, I'm Danielle," I say, swallowing hard on a glob of peanut butter, then taking a quick swig of water to wash it off my tongue and flash them a smile. "I'm sorry, I was really hungry. I just finished a few minutes ago, and that was the most I have ridden in a long time." Is it ridden or rode? Is ridden even a word? I think about the century I rode in college, 100 miles to Picacho Peak from Tucson on a Super Bowl Sunday. A full day of hard exercise, and a free pass to enjoy all the chips and dip at my boyfriend's Super Bowl party that afternoon. "Ah, we understand. Good job," Steve says, evidently the designated speaker. "Did you happen to be riding with Liz? She crashed after the first rest stop, and we haven't seen her since." "Oh my gosh, no, I didn't even know she crashed," I say. "We were supposed to ride together today, but right before we started, she realized she forgot her helmet and went back to her car to get it. She told me to just start and she would catch up, but she never did. And I didn't stop and wait because I was afraid I'd never get going again if I did. I didn't want to end up last." I feel a pang of guilt for not insisting Liz and I start and finish together, and I hope my friend's okay. "Oh, you were far from last. There are still people coming in. Probably will be for a few hours yet. You didn't do so bad," Steve reassures me. 80 miles is no joke. They call it the MS-150, but it's actually 80 miles each way, 160 miles. "Well, no wonder I'm so tired," I quip. "Who decided to add on an extra 5 miles each way?" All three boys laugh lightly, and Steve says, "Well, we're going to go get our camp set up. Maybe we'll see you later." And I'm going to sit right here and eat this amazing peanut butter and jelly sandwich. "I'll tell Liz you were looking for her," I say, smiling. Liz is my best cycling buddy. We met at the Saturday morning ride our local bike shop puts on each week. They call it the ABC ride. A's are super fast, think Tour de France. B's are just a little less quick, and C's are speedy compared to an old lady on a beach cruiser, but too slow to keep up with most serious cyclists. Liz and I fit squarely into the C category, which is fine with us. The way we figure, we're still doing way more before 8 a.m. than most people do all day. We usually ride around 30 miles each Saturday. The MS-150 is our first stab at a big ride. Just like runners train for marathons, a few months ago we decided we should train for something more than just getting around the mountain and home in one piece on a Saturday morning. Liz organized a corporate team through Bank of America where she works. She got the bank to sponsor us and match all our donations. But other than a few introductions at the start with some of the team members, and a brief conversation just now, I really don't feel much a part of a team. I rode solo most of the day, meeting people along the way, even catching a couple of fast cyclists from my real estate firm and drafting off them for a few minutes before falling back into my own slower cadence. Eventually, I find Liz, unscathed by her crash, aside from a small scratch on her leg and a bruised ego. We collect our bags from the neatly staged rows where they have unloaded them for the trucks. Then we lug our stuff over to the big circus tent where we'll sleep tonight, pump up the queen-sized air mattress my sister Courtney let us borrow, and set out our sleeping bags. We gather our shower supplies and head off to the girls' locker rooms by the gym, passing a few tents along the way. Our group of a few thousand cyclists has completely invaded the small campus, some under the community tent and others in their own tents scattered among the school buildings. In the locker room, there are girls in various stages of undress, not at all bashful to be taking a public shower in a high school gym. Apparently, most of them haven't heard of using a razor down there, I notice, without wanting to have that much information. Though I like to think I'm comfortable with my body and I'm in decent shape from all the riding and yoga I've been doing lately, I have a hard time bearing it all in front of a bunch of women, or in front of anyone for that matter. I sheepishly undress, wrapping myself in my teal green towel as quickly as I can, and only removing it a moment before I slip under the stream of warm water. The water stings my chafed skin, but it feels good to be clean. I pull on a pair of Abercrombie jeans and a light blue tank top, then zip on a gray hoodie. I grab my makeup bag and walk over to the mirror. Not bad, I think, checking out my reflection. Rosy cheeks, deep brown eyes, pretty face, and a curvy but fit body. Even if I'll never be drop-dead gorgeous, I look casual yet feminine. It would be nice to meet a cute cyclist tonight at dinner, I muse, already tasting the spaghetti and meatballs. I think I'll even have a nice cold craft beer with dinner. Beer is not usually my drink of choice, but sounds amazing right now after all that hard exercise. I've only recently resolved to spend less time obsessing over guys and more time focusing on what I love to do, like cycling, yoga, singing, and writing. And of course, real estate, which is how I make a living. But my secret hope is that by not focusing on it so much, a great guy will magically show up. And as far as I'm concerned, tonight would be as good a time as any. I brush on a little pressed powder to even out my sunburned complexion, and just a tiny bit of mascara and lip gloss. I don't want to look too made up. It's dinner in a tent on a high school football field. And I think cyclists tend to like the natural look anyway. I rub some gel through my naturally curly hair and twirl it with my fingers so it will dry smooth and wavy. Content with the result, I slip on my flip-flops and head back to camp. After dinner, Liz heads off to make a phone call, and I hang around to mingle in the makeshift bar area. I notice several cute guys, but each time I start to consider one, a girl walks up and grabs his arm. It's pathetic, really. Are all the good guys taken? I've certainly dated my fair share in the year and a half since my divorce. But now, I'm at a crossroads, sick of all the men who only want one thing, weary of giving it to them and then getting hurt, but not sure how to find a nice one who's also good-looking, fun, and likes me back. I glance at my watch. It's only 8, but I'm beat. I head back to the tent, thinking I'll see Liz there. She isn't there, but I pull off my jeans and slide into my sleeping bag. I lie wide awake for about 5 minutes before I realize I still have my contacts in. I consider taking them out right there in the dark, but decide that could be a disaster. Besides, as exhausted as I am, I just don't feel sleepy. And I wonder again where Liz is. She showed me where the B of A guys had set up their tent, so I slide my jeans back on and head over. When I walk up, they're chatting along a low wall under a large tree just outside their tent. "Hey guys, hope I'm not interrupting anything," I say brightly. "Hi, Danielle. Not at all. Just got here myself. Glad you found us," Liz says. "I tried going to bed, but it was just too early, so I thought I'd come look for you." "Good to see you," says Luke with a smile. He's boyishly cute, tall and very lean. Some people might say he's too skinny, but I've always preferred long and lanky muscles over short and bulky ones like my own. He reintroduces himself and the others. James, who it turns out is his brother, and an older guy, Ken, who I didn't meet earlier. Steve has gone home to be with his wife and new baby. "Why don't you girls have a seat and stay a while?" says Luke, offering his fold-up camping chair to Liz. James stands up wordlessly, looks at me, and gestures toward his own chair. I smile up at him. Wow, I didn't notice how tall he was earlier. "How sweet you boys are giving your chairs up to the girls. Your mom must have raised you right," I say, flirting. I glance furtively at Luke and notice his bright blue eyes and chiseled jaw. But then my eyes fall to his bright gold wedding band. Yep, all the good ones are taken. Then I turn to James. No wedding band there. He's sitting behind me in the shadows, so I can't check him out without being obvious. He seems kind of shy, a little scruffy, in a way that could possibly be sexy, and very tall. I've always liked tall guys. 6 feet, maybe 6'2", feels just about right to me, even though I'm barely 5'1". But I'm pretty sure James is closer to 6.5". We talk and joke for a few hours. The conversation moves to careers, and I tell them I'm a realtor. "Cool. Maybe you can help Jimmy find a house when he gets on with the fire department," Luke says brightly. I smile at the childish nickname. James wants to be a firefighter. How cool. Most of the potential clients who stop by the real estate kiosk at the Scottsdale Mall where I've recently started working are single guys. Although I'm sure some of them are looking for a date more than a home, I think I'm just approachable and relate well on a professional level to guys. We start talking about tandem bicycles, where two people ride together on one bike. "It'd be so cool to find someone to ride a tandem with," I say. I notice a quick, almost imperceptible glance between Luke and James. Finally, yawning, Liz and I get up to go get some sleep for the big ride back to Phoenix tomorrow. James hasn't said much to me, but he seems interested, in an innocently shy sort of way, and I feel butterflies in my stomach at the anticipation of something new. I did ask God for someone different from the typical guys I usually fall for. Maybe shy and innocent is a good thing. I'm pretty sure he's not Jewish, but it never seems to work out with the Jewish guys anyway, even if I do manage to find one I'm attracted to. Hardly any of my past boyfriends or even my ex-husband were Jewish, though my faith is a big part of who I am. I wonder if he's Mormon, I think, just before drifting off to sleep. I'm woken several times during the night, once by someone's coughing spell on the other end of the tent, once because I have to pee, slide on the jeans, go outside and around the corner to the J. Johns, and then hightail it back to the tent, still a little scared of the dark, even at 29 years old. Finally, in the wee hours of the morning when it's still pitch dark out, I lie awake as some truck-mounted machines loudly and slowly suck all the waste from the J. Johns. It feels like I've just fallen back asleep when the alarm on my watch starts beeping me awake. I feel around for the button that makes it stop, hoping I hit snooze instead of off. I peel my eyes open when the beep wakes me up again 8 minutes later. Ouch! My body screams in pain as I carefully pull on a clean pair of cycling shorts and the light pink, form-fitting jersey my sister got me for my birthday a few months ago. The B of A one is still damp and smelly from yesterday, and this one's way cuter anyway. I grab my toiletry bag and head once again to the girls' locker room to brush my teeth, wash my face, and pull my hair back. I'm so sore I can barely walk over to the cafeteria for the pancake breakfast. How on earth am I supposed to ride another 80 miles today? I don't even think I could sit on the seat. I'm feeling grumpy as I nibble a few pancakes and gulp a cup of sweet coffee. After breakfast, I rest on the air mattress for a few minutes and then take some Excedrin, hoping it will dull the pain and give me a caffeine rush of energy. Then I pack up my sleeping bag and clothes and lug them back over to the trucks that will carry them back to Phoenix. I long to curl up in the truck with my bags. Nope, not an option. You are tough. You can do this. Reluctantly, Liz and I mount our bikes and start pedaling, wincing with every stroke. Even my wrists and ankles ache. The wind is blowing hard, which makes the whole thing feel like a futile plight. But we keep pedaling, and soon we make it to the first rest stop, 10 miles in. I'm not hungry, but I grab a few orange wedges and some Gatorade, fighting for a burst of energy. I still haven't quite woken up. We're just getting back on our bikes when the B of A guys, James, Luke, and Ken, pull up next to us. They started later than everyone, but have quickly caught up with the main group. "Look at you all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed," I say with a smile, making air quotes with my fingers and shaking my head in mock disgust. Like this is just a walk in the park. Mercifully, it's decided the guys will pull Liz and I for a while, blocking the wind so we can draft and ride easier. This will force them to slow their pace. But I get the feeling that behind all their bravado, they're tired too, and don't mind taking it easy today. And I sense James' friends playing wingmen, trying to nudge him toward me. The 80 miles pass in a blur. I spend most of them within a few feet of James, but I still haven't gotten a good look at him, our conversations brief and breathless as we pedaled our bikes. I've learned that he's the head mechanic and manager at a local bike shop. He's interviewing to become a firefighter, and he loves to mountain bike and go four-wheeling with his friends in a rock buggy he and Ken built together. James is more blue-collar than most of the guys I've dated, a guy's guy, and I like that. I can tell he's religious, or at least traditional, and his wholesome innocence is intriguing. I feel attracted to his essence, his soul. I've never felt anything like it, although I've always been dramatic with my feelings. Once I decide I like someone, I'm thinking about marriage before most guys think about a second date, which often leads to getting intimate too quickly and then getting attached just when he's ready to run. I remember when I first realized that kissing a boy didn't necessarily mean as much to him as it did to me. I was in high school and he was a friend of a friend, kind of a bad boy. I was surprised and flattered that he even liked me, although looking back, I don't think he bothered to take me out on a date. He did kiss me, though, and I thought that kiss sealed the deal, making us boyfriend and girlfriend. I probably asked him, "Does this mean we're dating? Or am I your girlfriend now?" I was such a dork. And of course, that scared him away. I never heard from him again. Don't even remember his name. I can't tell you how many more times a similar scenario would play out in my life. It hurt me every time, deeper than I realized. I've gotten numb to it, and I've learned not to expect much, to be a playful, fun sort of girl rather than a needy, emotional one. I've never understood why some girls have boyfriends that last forever. The guy they dated freshman year of high school is the one they marry. But everyone I like either ignores me or likes me for a day and then moves on. And on the rare occasion that a guy does want to stick around, then I'm the one who runs. I want something different from that now, but I feel like these initial experiences with love and lust, crushes and obsessions, have scarred me, and I'm not sure I'm even capable of forever love. But I'm overthinking it. I decide as James and I finally pedal into the parking lot of the Phoenix High School where the ride started yesterday. We join the rest of the group and enjoy barbecue sandwiches and free massages. I meet Luke's wife, Amanda, long legs clad in stretchy pants under a stylish sweater, freshly highlighted shoulder-length blonde hair, framing a lightly made-up, heart-shaped face with sparkly blue eyes. She hardly looks like a woman who just had a baby 3 weeks ago. All three of them, James, Luke, and Amanda, are like caricatures of this wholesome all-American family that feels just out of my reach, and I instantly find myself longing to be a part of it. I hand James my glossy realtor business card, complete with the requisite headshot in the upper right-hand corner. Not so much because I hope he'll call me to buy a house, but because I want to get to know him, and it's a convenient way to give him my number and a picture to remember me by. He's different, refreshing, and I sense a possibility of something with him.